a snowstorm, and they'd already run 10 miles in the morning. They had skied all day, black double diamonds, and they were going out, it was dark, freezing cold, and they're going out for another 10-mile run. And Prefontaine's like, ah, oh, Frank, you know, maybe we should just do five. And Frank's comment was, no one in the world is training harder than us right now.
Welcome to the Spartan Endurance Series on the Spartan Up Podcast. In today's classic episode of Spartan Up, we talk to two authors who spent their lives studying performance, perseverance, drive. The first is Stephen Pressfield, who's well known for his studies of the Spartan culture, but also for helping writers to overcome what he calls resistance. The second is Mike Sandrock, author of the book Running Tough. It studies what the toughest, greatest endurance runners did to train themselves physically, but especially mentally. You are going to walk away from this episode with an amazing new set of tools to get your mindset right. And we've included the original introductions from our classic panel, Colonel Nye, Sepher the Seed Huntress, Johnny Waite, and of course, Joe DeSena. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.
We are here in Pittsfield, SpartanUpPodcast.com. I've got Sepher, the wilderness refugee. What do we call it?
I like it.
It's getting better every time.
The rewilding expert. We got Johnny, Dr. Johnny. Yeah. It's like Dr. Yeah. Phil. And we got Colonel Nye, fresh out of the military. We brought him in just for this.
Parachute. Fresh. 1 year.
1 year out of the military. We interviewed Stephen Pressfield. You were there. There was a camera person with us. I don't remember her name. And Marion, of course. She goes with us everywhere.
One, the only.
I had no idea. This guy is Sparta, right? Wrote Gates of Fire. You told me that book is distributed all over the U.S. military, even foreign militaries.
Read
the book.
It is.
He is the preeminent expert
on
Sparta.
Sparta, and maybe Athens as well.
Athens,
the Athenians.
We talk about the Athenians with him.
Kind of the difference between the two cultures and how they grew. There were rivalries.
Yeah.
So,
is there any truth to, I heard that the leaders back then in Spartan times would say, those bastards are going to war. That's like a vacation for them compared to the training and the way they live.
That's true. That's what they say about the Spartans and certainly about other. You know, I've been studying a bit about the Israeli army, the IDF, and that, in many ways, that's their theory, too, that it'll be a relief to go to war because it's easier than the way we train.
Yeah.
You know, which makes a lot of sense if you're training people.
So that's my whole theory on frame of reference. When I was very young, I had my first business, and what intrigued me was I went through hundreds and hundreds of employees, but then I landed some Eastern Europeans. And I couldn't believe what happened. They worked harder than I did. I couldn't keep up with them.
Ah.
And so I studied it as a social experiment for myself. And what occurred to me was, well, they just came from a place that was harder than what I was throwing at them. So this was easy. So I think frame of reference is such a key, which is what I think we just touched on, right? Their frame of reference training was so hard. War is easy.
Right.
And so I tell people, and I'd love for you to touch on this, I tell people, change your frame of reference. Make things harder on yourself. Take a cold shower in the morning, right? Do 300 burpees so that when you get the bad news during the day or somebody cuts you off in traffic, no big deal. The burpees and a cold shower, worth. Does that make any sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense. I mean, I've even heard of that as a kind of a sales technique that, right, when you're, this was, from, where did I read this? In McCormick, I forgot his, Mark McCormick, where he says that if you're trying to convince somebody of something and they're resisting you, don't try to overcome the resistance. Instead, change the frame of reference. Like he would say, if I'm trying to sell you a house, and you say to me, "Wow, that is a lot of money for that house." If I say to you, "Yeah, but 10 years from now," how much money is it's going to seem really, really cheap, right? So you're absolutely right. Changing the frame of reference is a great way to do that. And that's really what elite military units do or elite athletic units. Like they create this world that's so difficult, you know, in the training aspect, in the artificial aspect of it, that when you get into the real stuff, It's easy.
I heard Phelps's coach used to purposely break his goggles or get him a flight that would get him late to the thing or take his shorts out of the bag so he didn't have any, so that if that ever happened when they were in the Olympics, he'd be able to deal with it. And I guess...
I never heard that before.
Yeah. I guess at one point his goggles did flip in the Olympics, but he had trained for that, so he dealt with it. And it occurred to me, I don't know if it's just me or if it's everybody, but... when I find my own resistance in something, like I don't want to get up today and go run, I don't want to take the cold shower, I don't feel like drinking the green juice, I make myself do it. So you've studied resistance, whether it's outside forces or internal resistance. What are your thoughts there?
Well, my thoughts on this came from being a writer. And as you know, there's a million people who think they can write, right? But when you put a blank page of piece of paper into a typewriter or face a blank screen, all of a sudden everything changes, right? And you really become aware, and people have written me thousands of letters on this subject, that coming off of that blank page is this force, a negative force, just like to take a cold shower to go for runs. It says, no, 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 no. And it comes up with a million reasons why you shouldn't do that, right? And also, it undermines that voice in your head begins undermining your self-confidence. Who are you to think you could start a business? Who are you? You had an idea for a race? Well, who's going to come to this race? You? Why should I listen to you, right? You know, and that is a voice of resistance. And as a writer, for years, that voice would steamroll me and defeat me. And finally, I just realized it's not me. It's not me that's thinking that thought. It's this force called resistance with a capital R. So that changed my whole life in the sense that I now, when I woke up in the morning, I said to myself, I expect this negative force. I expect this thing, this enemy, the alien, the shark in Jaws, whatever it is. It's relentless. It'll never give up. It's there every morning. You can never defeat it. And I just thought, well, each morning, just like you, I have to defeat this thing. There's a dragon, I gotta slay it. And so you evolve, like you have evolved with your races, certain techniques that will give you the energy, give you the strength, give you the perseverance, because you have to defeat it. There's no way to fake your way around it. You know, as a writer or an artist that's trying to put something on the page, you just gotta make yourself, just like you said, you gotta make yourself get down there and do it. And the other aspect of this is that when you're in the military, let's say, or you're in an organization, discipline is imposed upon you from without, right? You have a sergeant that's kicking your butt, or you also have a system of rewards. If you do well, somebody pats you on the back, that kind of thing. But when you're a solitary writer or an athlete, there's nobody making you get out of bed in the morning. In fact, you're totally free to stay there all day and eat donuts and, you know, hang out at Starbucks, right? So it becomes not externally imposed discipline, but self-discipline. And beyond that, self-validation, self-reinforcement. I know this is part of your thinking too, Jill, where you've got to be the one that says to you, you did good today, Joe. You got out there, you ran your 4 miles and you did it, and you hated, but at the end of the, when you finished, you said, this is great, I got it. And each success, I have a friend, Randy Wallace, the guy who wrote Braveheart and has directed a bunch of movies, and he has a theory that he calls little successes. And in the morning, he just tries to have like one little success and another one until he actually has to sit down and do the work, which is really the hard stuff. And you know, going to the gym is a little success. You know, having a healthy breakfast is a little success. Giving money to somebody on the street.
It's funny, Admiral McRaven just did a speech, and his thing was, you want to change the world, start by making your bed in the morning. And that was his message, right?
Great.
One little success, and the second success. Right.
Which is a very Spartan thing to do, too. Don't look to anybody else to do it. Right. You know, do it yourself, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a great message. So what percentage of people in your mind have that ability to not, they don't need a life coach, they don't need somebody above telling them what to do, because those are the people I've been looking for my whole life, right? That's that Eastern European that showed up in my truck in the first business that just got
it
done.
Right,
are those one percenters?
It's pretty small, I think, you know, because I consider myself, you know, to be very strong at that. But even I need help too. You know, I need help.
We all do,
I need
yeah.
somebody that. So I think we're crazy not to get help. You know, even if it's from your friends or something like that. If it's not a professional type of thing, but
that's interesting though, because is that I noticed with Spartan Race. You enter the race and all of a sudden you start finding new friends.
Yeah, I bet.
And they
that's
start
true.
To up your game because they're waking up early, right? And so there's this pressure, this positive pressure that comes because there's a different, you're playing at a different level of person around you. Does that?
Absolutely. And I sort of have a concept that I talk about as a way of overcoming resistance. It's turning pro, that you sort of flip the switch in your mind and you're no longer an amateur. That's going to give in to adversity, right? And you know, you become a pro and you're willing to play hurt and all that sort of thing. What happens, and I'm sure you found this too, Joe, is when you kind of flip that switch in your mind, new friends come into your life. Not old friends drop away. They say to you, what happened to you, Joe? You're not the same guy, man. What are you out and running along the beach for, you know? We want you to stay here getting stoned with us and doing nothing,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
And so those friends fall away and new friends come into your life. And that's, I guess, what you're just talking about here, right? And each one sort of ups the game
ups the
of
game.
The other person.
Yeah.
You know? Because you see it work for somebody else, and they see it working for you. And it's hard, because every day it's against resistance. It's against that force, like gravity, that's trying to hold you down. And you're
I love what you're saying about
that force.
Yeah, I love what you're saying about resistance, because if you know going in, all right, I'm going to wake up in the morning, I got to deal with this resistance. If you know that going in, well, then you're not caught off guard by it, right?
Exactly.
Well, there's no, what's the word I'm looking for, where people, like in Israel, everybody goes into the military, right? And so that I think that's powerful. Damn it, I can't think of the sentence I'm thinking of, but everybody has to go through a rite of passage,
uh-huh.
right? I mean, yeah. As many cultures do that, we don't do that anymore.
That's true.
And so Spartan could be the rite of passage.
Maybe so.
Well, thanks
what's
for coming.
What's great about it, Joe, what's great about Spartan Races and Spartan Up is that it's ultimately up to the individual. It's a volunteer situation, right? Nobody's forcing anybody to do it. People do it because they've reached a point in their life, usually where, you know, something's not working, right? And they say, I gotta try something new. And nobody forces you to keep doing it, whether it's your race and your system or any you know, exercise and self-discipline. Nobody makes you do it, and nobody makes you keep doing it. So that commitment, and that determination, that ethic has to come from within. And I think the more we can do that, any society, the healthier it is. You know, the less things have to be imposed from outside against our will or, you know,
yeah.
the better. Because it's freedom, it's a choice, right? And it's a choice in the face of adversity, a choice even to embrace adversity.
But would you, I go back and forth in my mind, wouldn't you rather just cut out, like if you were running a government, just cut out soda, cut out donuts, cut all that stuff out, or you rather give people that choice, cigarettes?
I'd be given the choice, I think it definitely, because that way we all have to make that choice, right? In a way, that's why God gave us free will, right? He could have, you know, designed the universe where everybody just woke up in the morning and started running and doing, right?
That's really instead, what I'm looking for. Maybe you know, if we could just, like, lights out at 8, everybody goes to bed, celery and water is the only food you can eat, but...
You know, we'll go a little farther than we should go here, but you can cut this out. Have you ever read Pericles' Funeral Oration?
No.
In Thucydides' History of the Peloponnesian War? Sounds like totally abstruse, but it's not. Pericles was like the greatest Athenian, right? In the Golden Age, he was the leader. And Athens was the rival of Sparta, right? And once each year, a citizen was chosen of Athens to give a speech in praise of the city of Athens. And he gave this one speech. It's really worth reading. And basically what he said was, the Spartans are rivals, and we respect the hell out of them, but they have to beat the hell out of each other, you know, and train each other from birth and impose this rigid, rigid system to achieve what they've achieved. But here in Athens, we believe in absolute freedom for the individual, and we're just as tough as they are, you know? And so he made the case of that freedom of choice
is just as powerful.
Was empowering, really empowering, you know? Because the Athenians didn't just lie around and eat donuts all day. They were out there, you know, conquering the world and doing other things. Yeah. So it's really interesting that those two cities in ancient Greece that had polar opposite concepts of what would work, and yet they both worked. They both were great.
We'll be back right after the break with the interview with Mike Sandrock. You will definitely want to stay for that. We'll be right back to this interview, but first a message from today's sponsor, Durolane. You know that knee pain can really slow you down. Sometimes that knee pain is due to osteoarthritis, a disease that affects some 14 million Americans. Learn about osteoarthritis knee pain and how to alleviate it at oaknepainrelief.com. You'll find information there about non-surgical, non-opioid treatments for osteoarthritis knee pain that may help delay the need for knee surgery. One treatment you'll find there is Durolane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months of relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. It's indicated for the treatment of mild to moderate osteoarthritis knee pain when conservative treatments have not worked. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. Full prescribing information is at Durolane.com. Spartans say no to limits. You can learn more at oaknepainrelief.com. That's oaknepainrelief.com. All right, back to the interview.
All right, Spartan Up the podcast. I am Sephra, the rewilding expert, and I'm here with Joe DeSena, Johnny Waite, and Colonel Nye. We are in the beautiful Pittsfield, Vermont, and Joe just came back from being out in Colorado with a wonderful guy named Mike Sandrock.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy, clearly an intellectual. You guys are going to love hearing from him. He's got some great old running stories about the Pre-Fontaine era.
He was cute.
Yeah, he definitely gets it. He was an amazing athlete himself. So yeah, let's do it.
Really, it's the mind that stops you, right? So your mind said at 22, I'm done, but your mind didn't have to say that.
No. I looking back, if I'd known what I know now, I would have stuck around for a few more years, see if I could have made the 84 Olympic team. But by then, I was well into my career and, you know, running really wasn't part of my life. Like, you have to be, to make it to the Olympics or Olympic trials even, it has to consume your life. You're either running or you're thinking about running or you're recovering from a run. Right. You got to give 100%. And I think that's what we find with these Spartan athletes that you've been interviewing. If you give 90%, 95%, 99%, forget it. You're not going to make it. It's 100 or nothing.
And then another guy, a local guy that still lives in Boulder, Arturo Barrios, 5 world records. When he first came to town, the first time I was running with him, we were running along the creek, and there's a statue of Chief Nawat there. Chief Nawat, the Native American who helped the first Europeans who came here, even though he knew by helping them, they would come back and destroy his way of life. So we ran by, and I tapped Chief Nawat as we ran by, and Arturo said, hey, Rock, what did you do that for? I said, well, that's for good luck. And we finished the run. It was all over the canyon and back. We're coming back, and he didn't say anything. We got back, and all he said was, you know what? I trained for good luck. I just love that. That sums it up.
That's a great saying.
Yeah, you've heard that before,
No, I never heard it before. I like that. Yeah.
I train for good luck. That's our
tour. Make your own luck.
That's it. Yeah, train for good luck. And so that's the commonality. But I think the other thing was just having great support. But it's like I just said about the self-actualization. It's just, I think it's just finding, just being the best you can be, in a sense, to discover who you are, because we create ourselves by our choices. Just like you're doing, you created the Spartan race, and you're doing this documentary going around. So you're, by your choices, you're marrying, you're creating your life. And by doing that, you're self-actualizing. That's what gives you satisfaction. You could be doing, other things, obviously. Playing golf with Ted or something like that.
I don't like golf.
Yeah, see?
I just want the cool gear.
Yeah, I want the cool gear.
But let's go back to you interview these 21 people. You write this mm-hmm. book. You could have chosen anybody to write about. Mm-hmm. You pick the best of the best as far as running goes, in wholeness, best of the best in life, right? They weren't just the fastest runners.
Yeah.
What did you find that can be passed on to the average person who says to us, Joe, how do I stay motivated? Joe, how do I get in shape? Joe, how do I change my life?
I can answer that. It's a great question. And Hemingway gave us the answer, because when people would say, oh, they have writer's block and everything, they're waiting for inspiration. And Hemingway's comment was, inspiration is hard work. So there was one local guy that really, one of my favorites is Rob DiCostella, Australian world record holder, marathoner, considered the best marathoner of the 1990s. We would get together for big group run, all these great guys, and someone would say, it's just like below zero, and people would say, we gotta go out and run 10 miles, it's snowing, it's all wet, we're freezing. And his nickname was Deke. Deke would always say, what's the first rule? And we would all say in unison, no whinging. And so no whinging is one of the rules, you know, for the Spartan athletes. No whinging, meaning that's Aussie slang for no whining, no complaining.
I like
it's just like,
just deal with it.
Inspiration is hard work. You just get up and you don't even think about it. If you're an athlete, you get up and you're going to run in the morning. If you're a triathlete, you're going to go up and swim. If you're a businessman, you're going to get up and, you know, do the stuff you have to do.
I think I just triggered something in my head. I think Thomas Edison said something. I'm going to botch this, but most people miss opportunity because it's dressed in overalls and it's disguised as hard work.
Nice, right? I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
So
That's it.
So there
are no shortcuts.
And the other thing is, I don't know if you found this, but it's almost more exhilarating going out in bad weather. Like bad weather does something, right? It's like the worse the weather is, get outside and deal with it.
Yeah, that reminds me of one other thing, and we'll get to Ted, but the other thing that all these 21 greats had is confidence. Every single one of them really believed that they were the best. And that confidence comes from doing the hard work. So Shorter had the story that he told me. It was Steve Prefontaine. He was down in Taos, New Mexico, running with Steve Prefontaine, 1970. It was the same thing. They were in 170-mile week at altitude, and it's a snowstorm, and they'd already run 10 miles in the morning. They had skied all day, black double diamonds, and they were going out. It was dark, freezing cold, and they're going out for another 10-mile run. And Prefontaine's like, Frank, you know, maybe we should just do five. And Frank's comment was, no one in the world is training harder than us right now. So he had that confidence that when he stepped to the line in Munich in 1972, and at 15 kilometers, he made that break in, it's called the English Garden, and no one went with him. He was confident that he could hold that surge, and he was smart enough, he would accelerate, go surging around the corners, so the guys behind him couldn't see him, and that's what's considered the start of the running boom. That move at 15K, and that's what started the running boom, and it all came from the confidence. So these 21 greats.
So that's where that confidence comes from, putting in the hard work.
Yeah, that's it. The overalls.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're saying when they got on the starting line, they could look to their left and right and say, you know what, no one's trained as hard as we've trained.
Yeah, that's right. But here's the thing, people now in the States, we don't have to train that hard, right? You don't have to train that hard. You can have a comfortable life. And not be a Frank Shorter or a Vincent Van Gogh or an Ernest Hemingway.
Why?
Well, because we have everything here. We have food, right? We have shelter.
Right.
Even if you're, you know.
We have it pretty easy.
So, you know, you don't have to do that. You can still have a comfortable life. But what I've noticed about these guys, you could say, is that that the comfortable life might not be the most significant one. So the book.
I was just reading The Warrior Ethos. And many of those old cultures that would conquer other cultures in really difficult areas where there was like no ability to farm, it was all rock, harsh weather, they would think that once they conquered that area, that those people would leave that area because it was so terrible. And invariably what they found was they didn't want to leave that area because harsh conditions make tough people.
Yeah.
And they knew that, right? So maybe it's not so great to be comfortable.
That's it. In the Emil Zatopek, who's my favorite in the book, he 1952 Olympics. He's the only guy ever in history to win the 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, and marathon.
Never been done again.
Never been done again, and he did it just through
hard work.
Tough conditions. Ted had mentioned earlier on our fast run. Zatopek, you know, he would. His wife would say, "Emil, we have to do. You haven't done the laundry yet." So he would have it in the tub, and instead of scrubbing the laundry, he would just run in place on top of his laundry.
Four or five hours.
A long time, yeah. He would do it. He would do workouts like 100 times 400 meters.
Wow.
He was the first guy, yeah. So this is 1940s and 1948.
Hang on. Spartan athletes, you hear that? 100 times 400 meters.
Yeah.
Is that like in a day?
That's the word of workout. That's it. Yeah, yeah. And so, but he was a real humanist, and so he could speak many languages. And so during the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki, height of the Cold War. He was a guy who could, he brought all the Americans together with the Russians, with the Germans, with the Poles, because he could speak all those languages. And I was fortunate enough to go visit him three times before he passed away. And I showed up at his house. Here I am, and I'm all grubby, and all. I even look grubbier than I do now. And I show up at his house, knock on the door, and he's like, hey, how you doing? It's just like he'd been waiting for me. He says, come on in, you know, and we're just in time for dinner. Here, sit down and tell me about yourself. And so to me, I mean, what a great guy. And so that's the ideal of you know, like a human being.
Super athlete and just great person.
Aren't there's a story too from your book I recall where he purposely trained in army boots and heavy boots. So then when he put on the spikes on the track, it was like he was running on air. I mean, we've all tried to run in boots before, and after a couple hundred yards, you give up. It's like, oh my God, this is so painful, right? But he would do 400 meter repeats.
Yeah, and then he would hold his breath. He had sentry duty because he was in the army, and he would hold his breath. See how long he would hold his breath till he passed out and just, you know, collapsed.
I absolutely love that one. That was really phenomenal energy. Love the idea about when you're standing at the starting line to just know that you've trained harder than anyone else and you've done everything you can up until then. So I just want to kick off with that. To me, that was a really impactful part of that.
You got to believe it, though. I try to tell my young boys who wrestle, guys, you are strong. It's no big deal that the other guy has some move or whatever. You can overcome this. And I think it's a hard thing. I don't know what your thoughts are on that or Miss Wilderness's thoughts are on that. But it's hard to believe it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, we've done a lot of wrestling talk here. And so when wrestling, I've always kind of told my kids or whoever, you got to always respect your opponent. So you may believe that you're better trained, better equipped, and you've trained harder than anybody else, but you still don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you want to know what's going to happen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Endurance Series on Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.